sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
From a market boom to a big fat bust this week, government shutdown seems to be averted. The 10-year Treasury is sub 2.1%. And our guest today is Blaine Rankensmeyer from Ticker TV. All this and much more on episode number 392 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, and it is episode number 392 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me, and we have some interesting things to talk about today. Markets did, in fact, reverse course pretty abruptly last week. A lot of it could be due to the fact that there was some concern that there would be a government shutdown. Once again, the fact that there was some, hinky little doodads put into the bill right before the vote happened, and that caused a lot of problems in the House and in the Senate. There was some concern. There was some concern that, well, you know what, if we can't get through this, and this late little curveball that was thrown in wouldn't be able to be resolved, then, hey, you know what? Government's going to shut down. We've seen this on numerous times with this Congress and this president really going head-to-head on almost every single situation that has occurred, and this is no different now. We saw that Ted Cruz and a couple of others seem to have caused all sorts of a ruckus when it came to putting in this little bitty item and a procedural issue and postpone the vote and when is it going to happen. Well, it appears that at least for the time being, until we see a little bit further, maybe into Monday, that the shutdown of the government and the $1.1 trillion spending bill that was proposed has passed, and now the government, well, can stay open again. Hello, open the doors for business. And it's possible that that had something to do with the acceleration of the sell-off into the close on Friday, but that wasn't the only situation, because before that, we saw that the continuation of concern in Europe and Asia was pretty much high. Listen to these numbers. This is pretty ugly. On Friday, first, we'll talk about the Dow Jones down 1.75%, 315 points. The S&P 500 down 1.62%. NASDAQ was down about 1%. But in Europe, the Euro Stock Index down 2.9%, CAC down 2.7%. The Spanish market's down 3%, and Spain down 2.75%, Swiss down 180%. But for the week, this is where the trouble really came in. There were some big numbers that hit the tape over the week, the 5 days ending Friday last week. The Dow Jones was down 3.75%, S&P 3.5%. Canada was down 5% for the week. Brazil was down about 7.6%. In Europe, the stock index down 6.4%. France was downgraded, by the way, last week towards the end of the week. Overall, that market was down 7% for the week. Same thing with Spain and Italy, down 6% to 7%, etc. Nikkei was down 3% for the week. Hang Seng down 3%. Australia down 2.17%. So this wasn't just isolated to a one-day situation, although some of the concern coming up towards the end of the week, I think, really kicked in. We are seeing now, because we've seen such a very slow and steady climb over the last month and a half, well, now we're seeing that the readings on the oversold and overbought rating have tilted pretty dramatically to the oversold level. And you would expect that with seeing some of this major carnage that went on. There was a lot of indiscriminate selling that happened, I think, on Friday, especially towards the end. There was a lot of dumping that was going on. There was also very big concern about what was going on with oil. Another horrible week, just absolutely abysmal week for commodities. And oil plunged pretty significantly and is now, you know, below $60 per barrel, significantly below. And there is some talk about the potential for it to go down as low as 40. As a matter of fact, the United Arab Emirates over the weekend said that they're really not a concern about increasing production or changing anything or maybe even intervening, all the way down to $40. And this is the story we're hearing. Now, are they really serious about breaking the back of the frackers and drillers in the U.S. to a point that they're willing to take it down that low? It's possible. We are also seeing that there is quite a significant demand situation, where we saw the Department of Energy come out with their numbers on Wednesday after the API numbers came out on Tuesday evening, and there was a significant amount of growth in inventories. In other words, there's a lot of excess oil that is sticking around, and that, again, caused more problems. I will tell you, though, there is some bargains about to happen here. If we can get oil to stabilize, even in the slightest amount, many of the drillers and maybe many of the service companies, many of the affiliated companies that work inside the oil and gas area have been sold off with abandon. And with that, you see the XLE, which is the S&P 500 sector for the energy companies, the stocks, has really sold off as well. And I still believe we've been playing with the XLE option, call option, back and forth a couple of different times, making some money on that as we're seeing the price movements stabilize and then sell off and move out of that. Point is that I think that you need to watch many of the companies in the service sector who have been just taken to the cleaners, to the woodshed, beaten up, and left pretty much for dead right now. Their bonds have dropped dramatically. A lot of those have junk status. And we're seeing that the continuation of the selling of these is much like we've seen what happened with the gold miners, the regular gold miners, you know, that are part of the gold industry as well as some of the junior miners. Those were sold and have been getting sold, I mean, down 40%, 50%, some of them 60% this year. Same thing is happening with many of the energy stocks. And we did see when oil did, in fact, just for a little while, about a week or maybe 2 weeks, to stabilize just for a little while a few weeks back, those companies really popped very nicely. Now, they rolled over again once we saw that oil was starting to lose its steam and really fall back over. And there's a big concern, like I said, that many of these companies won't be able to survive. Now, some of the ones that you're thinking of that you wonder about, the big boys, I don't think they're going to have much trouble. They may not be able to make money as they had been making before, but these are companies that I really want you to take a look at, because these are the companies that if there is any kind of significant stabilization, they are going to benefit dramatically. So the rollout of money from these into things like social media, healthcare has been very apparent. The rotation and the desire to either short or just move out of the companies within the energy sector has been ongoing. But when we've seen something like this in the past, the opportunity to make some very, very good money has always appeared very quickly. So keep these on your radar. Keep these on your watch list. Make a note of some of the companies, whether it's things like Halliburton or Baker Hughes, Chevron. Take a look at BP. Look at all the different various drillers. Things also in the industry itself. Continental Resources, U.S. Silica. These are the companies that will be pummeled when prices go down in terms of oil. But again, once they stabilize, there's going to be a lot of people that are running back into them. They're a big part of the overall index, whether it's the S&P or the Dow for that matter, but more so energy for the S&P 500. And a lot of the movement that we saw that happened on Friday, Thursday, was because of the energy shares really taking things down. A lot of concern, a lot of worry about why is oil falling? Is it something more than just simply this situation with supply that is coming on right now and the lack of demand? Or is it a global slowdown that has really been the big concern? Is this kind of the canary in the coal mine when you look at this? And is this the canary that's starting to choke out? And you know what happens with canaries in coal mines when there is a situation where it's a bad atmospheric situation, well, they croak. That's the whole point of the saying. So is this the canary in the coal mine when it comes to oil? Is this something that we're going to see a follow-through for markets? Now, we look at this on a couple of different ways. It's good in that gas prices are much lower. Gas at the pump has dropped below $3 in most of the country. And there's some places that even have a $2 per gallon at the pump gas. And a lot of analysts are talking about this being likened to a major tax cut in the amount of somewhere about $300 billion per year at the current prices. In fact, there was an interesting story that I'll go through that I saw on Bloomberg this week. And we talked about first the Dow Jones Industrial Average capping the worst week since 2011. It was a 100-point lurch to the downside on Friday. Equities tumbled around the world after crude extended declines below $58 a barrel on that day. And treasuries rose. As a matter of fact, the treasury, the 10-year, is at 2.1%. The Dow fell 1.8% on Friday, S&P 1.6, as we talked about. And the overall WTI crude lost 3.8% for that one day. And the sell-off is happening because there was some further forecasts that said that, well, probably there's going to be less demand for oil. The International Energy Agency cut its forecast for global demand in markets through 2015. Oil slid a total of 12% for the week. So that's pretty interesting. It also is beneficial because it will allow a demand boost for central banks for their bonds, and it will also help them maintain stimulus, supposedly, to fight the deflation. So this kind of has a double-edged sword here. In fact, we saw that this decline in energy costs led to a faster-than-forecasted drop in wholesale prices in the U.S., which signals that inflation pressures remain relatively weak, even as the world's largest economy, the U.S., is expanding. And this weak inflation has allowed the Federal Reserve, of course, as we know, to keep interest rates at ridiculously low levels, even with the recovery that we've seen, because there's no inflation. Now, this week coming up, there is a Fed meeting, and a lot of people are predicting that they're going to take out the language of extended period, because the idea is they want to start letting you get used to this whole idea of, oh, well, you know, we are seeing that the incremental benefit to the U.S. economy is here. And on top of that, the fact that, you know, things are slowing down in terms of the rest of the world may be a problem. But here we can actually start to increase rates. Now, I am not so sure that the Fed is going to remove that language, considering the fact that inflation has really not been there. As a matter of fact, we're going the opposite way with the dollar rising as it is. We're seeing also the problems in Europe with deflationary pressures. We're seeing that Japan is back in recession, although this weekend it looks like Shinzo Abe, after he dissolved his parliament a couple weeks ago, and the vote that happened today, very low turnout, very, very low turnout on that, which is not a real morale booster or confidence booster overall, but he did win the seat again, and there is a majority of his cohorts now involved in parliament that will allow for him to continue with the Abenomics plan, whether it works or not, it seems. And with the fact that we are seeing a significant amount of drawdown in GDP there that they blame on some of the tax hike that we saw in mid-March, April, a significant slowdown in consumer activity that caused some of that. But at the same time, you know, we're finding that the yen being as low as it is, I do wonder, how is it possible that they're not getting any inflationary pressure and GDP is just horrible? With a low yen, you know that with a low currency, they should be doing very well. Their exports should be up dramatically. Their machine orders should be up. It's not the case. And you have to wonder, why is that? I don't think there is any actual answer, but this is some of the discussion, I think, that is going through the minds of investors, wondering what is going on with a better-than-expected economic recovery right now in the U.S., jobs numbers looking good, but yet at the same time we have oil falling dramatically. We have the fact that there is a significant drop in the price inflationary price, and we're seeing there's also a real layoff in terms of the bonds. Bonds are being bought like crazy. The yield's at 2.1. What is going on here that's not so obvious? It looks like things should be pretty good, but a lot of the background noise that's going on doesn't say that. In fact, we've been talking about this for a while. What exactly is going on here with the fact that you see this demand issue with oil, you see that the rest of the world is having problems, and the fact that the bond prices have been going up, that people are buying into Treasury, the safest bonds, safest investments right now at these ridiculously low yields. I think this is where the head scratching has to come into play, and we need to start being a little bit careful when it comes to money. You know, markets can run a lot longer than expected, especially on bad news, with anticipation that things are just better, and you have a lot of people and a lot of outside influences pushing markets up. So maybe that's kind of cooling off. I would expect that now that we saw a significant change in the market mood, there may be some further fall off. But with the fact that we did see, at least it seems that we've seen, an approval of the spending bill to keep the government going, things will get a little bit better. I think there was a lot of hesitation out there over the weekend and a lot of concern that what if, and there was a shutdown that would happen. But that doesn't seem like to be the case right now. Our guest today, Blaine Rankensmeyer. Now, we've had him on before, actually. He is the partner at Rank Media Group. They handle things like and create things like stockbroker.com, Stock Trading to Go, Investing Teacher, and brand new, we're going to talk about this today also, ticker.tv. They have some great things like TradeLog, all sorts of things. Last time that he was on, there was a lot of feedback that was really good, a lot of information that you could learn and use on a regular basis on his site. So I thought I'd bring him back because it's something new I want to talk about. Blaine, what's happening up there in the very cold weather state of Michigan?
Yeah, we're doing good, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me on again.
So you're always creating things. I know that. When you first came on, we talked about this whole it was the stockbrokers.com, where you do the ranking and the rating and the reviewing and the looking at all the different online brokers, right? That's something that you spent a lot of time doing.
Yeah, stockbrokers.com is our flagship site. We rank and review all the online brokers. In fact, our 2015 review, which will be published in February, is going on right now live. So we had brokers that flew in here to Michigan, our beautiful state of Michigan, and meeting with us. We're catching up on the whole industry. We have around 270 variables this year that we're assessing on, and then we'll have the final rankings out in February.
Wow, coming around. That's how long ago we've had you. I think we had you probably right on afterwards, in March or so.
Yeah, so, I think so.
Is there any new brokers out there, a lot of new brokers? Or it's kind of the same grouping that's kind of floating around. I don't remember any new names that have come on. Have you?
Yeah, no, not so much. I mean, there's a startup here and there, but we focus on those that have been established, and we stick with those, so...
So let's talk a little bit about some of the things. Let's talk about TradeLog. Now, TradeLog is where you can actually, and historically, you can pretty much put all your trades that you've done, and you can then find out what your efficiency is. Not only that, but on comparatively, et cetera. Take a little time and explain TradeLog and some of the new features you have with that.
Yeah, TradeLog was a really cool project. So I trade when I have free time. I'm definitely no professional, but I'm passionate. I have a huge passion for the market. And so when I have all these trades, and everyone uses Excel, right? Everyone has Excel. It's with with Microsoft there. But I was like, man, I want something easier that I can import my trades. I like tagging my trades with my strategies. I like to write my notes. I take screenshots of my charts. So I was like, I want to create something that makes it really easy for any investor to just import or enter their trades if they still like doing them manually, and then track that performance. Is my long strategy working great right now, or is it my day trading strategy, and how does that performance stack up? So we started with that premise, like, how do we move away from Excel? How can we reinvent how trades are tracked? And so what we ended up with now is we're at our most recent version 2.0. We did a new unique design on it, and it's more visually appealing. It's designed for the ease of use.
Well, that's important. That's the important thing. Let's also get to the fact this is kind of post-game review, and a lot of times, when you're in the heat of the moment and you're doing your thing and you're trading, it's easy enough to get wrapped up in it, but a lot of times people don't do a lot of work after the fact to really go in and understand what they did in terms of and why they did it, where the mistakes were. That's the biggest thing, right? Find your mistakes
Exactly. Yes. Yes. It's the, I feel like you have your pre-game analysis. You're doing your research. How am I going to get ready for today? Then you have your in-game analysis. Is this a bull flag? Is this a couple handle breakout? What's going on? What's the news? And then after, which so many investors overlook, mostly because of time, but you need to go back through those trades. Right. Where did I make my mistake? Where did I do something right? How can I improve?
Right. And that's a big thing. And it's very difficult because, first of all, you know, this trade, you know, I made this or that. And a lot of times only the good trades stand out. This is like the golf course transactions and the conversations where you hear, you know, your buddies talking, oh, man, I busted one good. I got, I bought ABC stock and I sold it a couple of days later for like 5 points. Like, wow, yeah, and I did this. Never do you hear any of the bad trades.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. As you know, Andrew, everything's so psychological. The game is such a mental game, and it's amazing how you might see a pattern and it works out, and you go, oh, I see it again, this doesn't work, and then the next 10 it doesn't work. But you know what? It's like you're psychologically programmed to be like, no, it's going to work this time, and if you don't have that data, how are you supposed to know?
Yeah, not only that, patterns don't always work. I mean, that's also the fact. You know, listen, there are different patterns. There's the support and resistance patterns, okay, because that's kind of accepted. The 50-day moving average line, 200-day moving average, that's accepted as for whatever reason, whoever made that up or whatever the story is, what's the magic on the 50-day? What's the magic on the 200-day? You know, because it's this many weeks, this many, okay, fine. But that's been generally accepted. Now, the other patterns that you may talk about is every time it gets to 72, it drops down 10 points, and then it goes around here, and then for 3 weeks it does this, and then look at that. This happened 5 times. Now that pattern's out there, it may not. As an example would be, about 2 weeks ago in the game we play on DH Unplugged, I came up with, hey, you know what? I looked at this stock. I looked at the trading pattern of Ulta Salon. And I noticed that, you know what? In this seasonal quarter, they usually don't have a good earnings report, or at least a not well-accepted earnings report, and stock drops. And the past two, it drops, you know, moves up nicely. And I looked at that over time. Like, okay, yeah, it's a game, so I'm not really putting money on this. But we put it out. I said, you know, let's short this stock and see what happens. And the guy, John, who I do the show with, said to me, you know what? Hey, now that we see a pattern, it's not going to ever work. Meanwhile, I put the short on, and stock was up like 5% after that. So the point I think that we're making here is that it's important to understand that, first of all, there can be patterns. We understand that. But there may not necessarily be patterns. And don't get yourself so headstrong about something that you get yourself into trouble. And you can learn to find where those issues are by making notes, by using things like a trade log or trader's log, you know, that you have, and things of that nature. So it's available for free, right?
Yeah, it's available for, we have our free, you can do a free 30-day trial. And then after that, it's just $10 a month.
Right.
So we wanted to keep it affordable, but I couldn't agree more. You're spot on. And it, especially with the, you have to adapt as a trader. And when you are, you know, those buy and sell rules you have for each strategy, you have to adapt and continuously tweak those depending on the market, depending on the different environment that you're in. And you're spot on, Andrew. It's one of those things where it's an evolution. And as soon as something figures it out, then, you know, hedge funds will be all over it. And then like this case, oh, it's going to gap after earnings. It's not going down anymore.
Right, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about this new thing that you have, because I'm pretty fascinated. You know, we do a lot of webinars, and we have in the past used things like GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar, a couple other ones. RingCentral has something we use also. A lot of them are really clunky, and because I think a lot of them deal with all those invitations, and then how do you get into the room, and is Omnovia, all these different things. One of the things that my understanding from what we talked about before was that you wanted to have the ability to access people who are desirous of sharing, the ability to access some of their, you know, inner thoughts in terms of what is going on in terms of their research and what they're doing on a regular basis. And this came off the whole idea of Twitch. Now, I think wasn't Twitch bought by Amazon?
Yeah, they were bought by Amazon earlier this year.
Okay, talk a little bit for those people who are not into gaming. Talk about Twitch, and then we're going to transition into ticker.tv.
Yeah, so Twitch is a community where anyone can broadcast themselves playing video games live. And then anyone then on the internet, as long as you have a web connection, can watch that person playing that game live. And pretty wild. Most people think, well, why would I watch someone play a video game? I would just play it myself. But Twitch has been a massive growth story. They have tens of millions of viewers now. And I think it's just because of engaging content. So you're streaming live content, live game And that's what Twitch is. That's the community.
Okay, so people are watching, again, whether we think this is a smart idea or not, it's not the point. We're just stating fact. Amazon bought them too. There must have been some money involved or something going on with all this. There's some kind of community. There's some kind of learning. There's some kind of interaction. And that's Twitch, and it deals with gaming. Now, what happens is you can see what people are doing by their webcam. You can hear what they're saying, if they choose to put it on. And then you can also see their screens and things like that. Now, let's transition this into just the web and in terms of ticker TV, what you're doing. Now, obviously, anybody can stream whatever they want. But the whole idea here is to stream investment content, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So we said, what about bringing this to the investment community? There's traders and investors out there. I flip through my 100-plus charts every night when I'm doing my research. If I could watch someone that I idolize or follow, then that would be engaging content for me. And so we said, you know what, let's try to build a community and let's make it where anyone, any investor, any trader can stream what they're doing live. I don't care if you're trading or you're doing research or you're, you know, waking up at 5 a.m. and checking the pre-markets. Let's make a community where anyone can stream.
Okay, so we have this streaming and the whole idea is that, for example, let's just use me as an example, okay? So I say, hey, we're going to have between the hour 1 and 2, we're going to have the all investment hour where we're going to be talking about various stocks that are making moves on the day, various markets, recap, and we're going to have a chat session. So there's a chat session that's open. And there's also a viewing of my screen and of, or maybe webcam or whatever else that I maybe want you to see in terms of my computers, et cetera. And then there's drawing tools maybe, or there's at least some kind of way to mark up a screen, I assume, of some sort. But the point is that people are now watching and listening to you discuss whatever it is. And it's an open forum, or it can be an open forum, in terms of chat. So in its rawest sense, I would think it's going to be just, you know, somebody out there with an open, you know, open desire to have their screen and talk and have a community and maybe multiple people talking. So maybe you have a group of friends that want to get together and talk about stocks. One guy will control the screen and look at maybe news and charts, and somebody else will be chatting and talking and things of that nature. On the other hand, it could be just a presentation, right?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And for you, Andrew, it would be, you're a smart guy. I mean, let's be real here. And I would love to watch you do your research, even if you're reading through an earnings report or you're looking at a chart, to watch you do that and have you commentate it would be so insightful for me. And that's the premise. It's that content where you're already doing this during the day, and I'm a follower of you. So to see that, and I can click a follow button just like Twitter. I follow you on Twitter. I can click a follow button on ticker.tv, and it'll notify me when you start streaming live. So you're building your own TV channel. CNBC has 24/7 content. That's one channel. Andrew, you would have your channel, and that is with something that anytime you stream, anyone can go and watch.
Hmm. I don't know if you want to watch me reading through an annual report, but other things I can imagine. That doesn't seem like that exciting, but I got you.
I don't know. You never know, Andrew.
Well, that, truth
like
be
the SEC filings and stuff.
Truth
and
be known. I make an SEC filing so exciting. You have no idea. Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. The comedy, the interaction, and all that, amazing. I've always wanted this. I said, people should be watching me read an SEC filing of an 8K. I've always thought my 8Ks will really do it.
Anyway. That's right. Yeah, and in HD too, Andrew. That's the big thing. Right. It's all in HD, right? You got to get that crystal
clarity. Right, of course. Of course. And you record that, I know, too. So I saw some of the ones. I know you just launched this. I saw some, and that's why I want to get people to think about this, because one of the other things that is really interesting is if people are interested in, it's not so much showmanship per se, right? But the idea of community and sharing. So you can have a person who wants to maybe learn, but at the same time, what they want to do is maybe stream and say, hey, you know, you can reverse this process. So what you can do is you can have somebody who is out there, and maybe you, a listener, and say, you know, I'd like to see where my flaws are on what I'm thinking here. Okay, so the idea of where I'm going to go on and I'm going to start looking at something, and I want feedback from others. So it's kind of reverse. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that can be an interesting way to play this as well and learn and all. And for that matter, it's good for maybe teachers and educators to interact. And again, I don't know if you could stop them from doing other subjects than stocks, but at least the point is that, you know, one of the things that you should also consider is maybe put the tickers that are discussed in some kind of a search. Maybe do this ready. Inside of some kind of a search. So somebody has a half-hour discussion, and all the tickers that they discuss should be hot-linked or should be tagged.
That's a really good idea. Yeah, I'll note it down. I mean, yeah. If That way, I guess it'd be easier for search and filtering out.
Yeah. This way, if somebody wants to look at, everybody's talking about Apple. Maybe somebody's talking about, you know, a different filter, technical analysis, fundamental analysis, education. You know, put different filters on there because right now it's again. I know this is new, but it's kind of like just everything's right there. But if you have categories and tags, I think that could be very helpful for people looking for certain things. Like if I want to learn just about technical analysis, you know, maybe I could just click that button and say, oh, let me see what's going on with technical analysis. That way I don't have to wade through all the people talking about fundamentals.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. As we add more broadcasters on there with their own channels, what will happen is you will start your stream. So I'll start my stream and I'm going to say, okay, I'm flipping through stock charts today. So I'm going to tag this with, you know, equities trading and research. And then anyone who goes to the site can see, oh, okay, my username is Stock Junkies. Oh, Stock Junkie is streaming about, you know, equities and research. Oh, this other person's, we had someone from Russia today doing Forex. So it's like, oh, okay, maybe I want to watch Forex trading in, you know, the Asian markets today. I want to check out Forex channels.
Right, exactly. All right, well, cool stuff. What else is going on in terms of investing teaching teachers?
Yeah, investingteacher.com. Yeah, it was one of our side projects, and it's just interactive education to teach stock charts, actually. So you can use it on your mobile, you can use it on your tablet, and you can draw. So we teach you what's support, what's resistance, how to look at a stock chart, you know, what's a volume bar. And it's a guide, an interactive guide, so you can say, oh, where's the resistance on this chart? You draw it, and we'll tell you if you're right or wrong. So it's been a cool project. It was a side project for us. And it still continues, you know, to sell every single month. And it's
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, selling every single month. I like that.
There you go.
Whether it's the main project or the side project. All right. Again, I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to find out more about this. I know it was a little bit new. We'll also tell our audience you and I have been talking about some different things that we could be doing with you. So if anything actually comes to fruition, we do something, we'll make sure that everybody knows about it. So Blaine Rankensmeyer from Rank Media Group, I really appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah. Thanks, Andrew.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. Education is important, and I think that any way that we can get more information and education from whether it's peers or professionals and somehow learn more about markets and how they work, make us better investors, make us better traders, and that's some of the things that we're trying to accomplish with, of course, this show. Also, just to mention that if you have any desire and you want to find out more about how we actually manage money, we have an open type of process where we have a private client website dedicated to the different strategies, the Arrow strategy as an example, or the TDI managed growth strategy. And all of our clients have access to that. We write on that regularly, telling what's going on with a stock that we may bought. For example, last week we worked the SPY, the S&P 500 ETF put option, because we saw that there was some lagginess in markets. It looked a bit overbought for a variety of different reasons, and we bought that and we turned in a couple of 100% returns over a couple of days on that, hedging the portfolio out pretty nicely during the week. Rotated it early morning on one day and bought it back the next, and that turned out to be a very good hedge. And these are some of the things that we talk about, as well as economics, etc. You can find out more information on the strategies, $50,000 minimum to invest, over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a video, there's information. You can request information on Arrow, which is our algorithmic strategy. It's the S&P 500 long, short, or out strategy. And that's a simple strategy that we develop, but very effective. And you can check out that. Also, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, which is a bit different, more complicated, but there's a lot more information on the website about that, of course. And if you want to contact me at any time, it's askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is my Twitter handle. Okay, so a couple of the things that I thought were really interesting about what went on last week. We saw that many of the social media stocks got hit pretty well. Facebook held up pretty darn well. And I got to tell you something, after their earnings release and their drop after that, concern about the money that they're spending long term, buyers stepped in and really haven't stopped. And it looks like they're at the top of their range right now, but it's pretty impressive how well Facebook has held up in the face of all this. On the other hand, one of the stocks that we have been trashing for some time and really concerned about was GoPro, and you see how that stock really did take a dip. I was hoping that the stock would hold up very nicely through the end of December and into January and then take a nice big short position on that, because I thought, and I do think, that after the holiday, as I mentioned last week, that the whole novelty of the item, of the GoPro, and the fact that it's not a have-to-have item was really going to hit pretty hard. Now, I don't know right now if this is just a reaction to markets and selling off some of the momentum names, or whether or not a lot of other analysts, investors, and hedge fund managers, et cetera, have decided also along with me that the probability is this is not going to be a story that sees a lot more seasonal play outside of, we'll call it, special holidays and Christmas and holiday season like we're seeing now. I don't know really how fast this can become a quote-unquote media company where they're going to be selling and making money from some of their media, or if this is a personal use product that, again, is, I use the word novelty and fad, if you will, that is going to really just be here for a little while and, you know, go to the wayside. Much different than an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy or any other smartphone. Much different than some of the other types of technology that we know about so well. This looks like it's very much situated in an area that is concentrated, obviously, in photography, video camera, moving pictures, whatever you want to call it. And it's something that is really cool, but I think a lot of people are going to want to get it initially, and particularly during the holiday season. And then I do wonder what the follow-on is going to be from there. I did buy the product. One of the reasons I bought it was to analyze and to understand more about what it was that all this brouhaha and excitement was all about. And I think I told you on DH Unplugged last week and also on this show that I thought it was really interesting, but at some point, I don't really understand the whole dynamic of how individuals are going to do anything more than shoot some pictures, leave it on the side, show a few interesting clips here and there about their hobbies, whatever it is that they do, and who knows from there. I'm not sure if this is something you're going to be carrying around in your back pocket on a regular basis. So that was a real issue, and the valuation and how much the stock has run up compared to its valuation and compared to its forward analyst outlook and earnings, I just couldn't see it. So hopefully you were able to hop on that, or if you were long, took my advice and said maybe this is a time that you should sell this out because the stock really got rocked pretty badly last week. A lot of the names, like the things we've talked about that we were really concerned about, like Pollo Loco, rolled over dramatically. So I think just a hair over, right under 23, 22 and change. This is a franchise that we were wondering also, hey, you know, what's the big deal here and why is this going to play out so well? Is this only going on the whole idea that, wow, this is the next Chipotle? And I said, I don't think so. From what I could see from the menu and the store growth, it's not really that great. And we did see that Yum Brands, Yum, which is concentrated heavily in China, but also McDonald's, their same-store sales were just awful. Their outlook was awful. They're cutting menu items to try to speed up service. So there's obviously a infrastructure and there's a overall problem when it comes to McDonald's and how they're doing what they're doing. Maybe we can look back one day and see that the death knell to the company was their dollar menu and the discounting that they did and the fact that everybody had to join in the party, all their competition, and it really helped to bring down pricing, hold it down, and unfortunately, with the fact that you see meat prices skyrocketing, and even though they hedge out a little bit, there was a lot more than meets the eye with McDonald's. Even though it holds a nice dividend, and even though it's a member of the Dow, et cetera, and even though it's McDonald's, for goodness sakes, you know, maybe there's a lot more going on there. Maybe, in fact, the whole new culture of eating more in a healthy manner and less dependent on these fast foods and you know, all these fattening and fatty and high caloric types of food, fast food, et cetera, is really something that is a generational issue. And who knows if the next generations are going to be cutting back on that kind of intake and whether or not McDonald's is seen as more of a, you know, a past generation types of food and fast food. Plenty of other options available these days that are much healthier in the fast food area. And maybe McDonald's isn't fast enough to keep pace with that. Not only here, but around the world, we're seeing that they're showing very poor same-store sales and sales growth. So, you know, there's a lot happening there as well. And I don't think that's as much of a demand issue in terms of people eating, but people eating differently. So it turns into a very selective demand issue. Now, the bigger The bigger question, I think the overriding question after we saw such a dramatic drop last week is what is in store for next week? What's the game plan? We know that the Fed is going to be releasing some information. We know that clearly Janet Yellen is going to be dovish as ever. That's the only mode that she knows. And I would think that running up into her presentation, as well as the release of the information from the Fed on Wednesday, the probability is, and what we've seen in the past, is that shorts will cover their positions. They don't want to be too sitting there too short or sitting on the short side of the book into that kind of announcement. They could always reload again after the fact. So you may see some upside opportunity after this big sell-off, after we've seen some of the things that go into making this market what it is, which is very easy money policy. In Japan, we saw that Shinzo Abe reelected. We see that in Europe, they're still talking about quantitative easing of sorts. We saw that inflation has been subdued. We see that the U.S. spending bill has passed, allowing for the government to stay open and averting this government shutdown. And the fact that you're going into seasonally very good timing into the holiday season. Don't forget, we only have about a week and a half or so until Christmas, 10 or 11 days. That's it. And then the end of the year ends up being a very slow period with a lot of people on holidays, and it's a very low volume outlook. And we've seen that while there was some pretty big volume last week, this is the time of year the seasonality takes over and people are pretty much just sitting pat. And as I had mentioned in my last show, that it stands to reason that the potential for a rise into the end of the year and then a drop off into January as people just blow out their positions and say, hey, you know what? We've had a nice run here, but maybe enough is enough. So the game plan, watch into, let's say, Tuesday. Watch Tuesday as if there is a reversal. If we do see a drop on Monday and we see that the continuation of the sell-off continues throughout Monday, I would venture to say that there's probably going to be some stabilization ahead of the Fed meeting. So that usually happens about a day before. So think about Tuesday and see if there's going to be a bit of a turnaround Tuesday and how that looks. And even if markets do pick up on Monday, I would say that we've actually taken down some of our short positions on our portfolios, and we've actually added a position in XLE. I think that the Fed is going to be very concerned about the rise of the dollar. They're going to be very concerned about inflation not picking up. They're going to be concerned about Europe having their problems. And I think that's going to go playing very well into a dovish outlook as usual. Whether or not they do remove the language that says that they're going to be staying, at a low interest for forever is really what it is. Or if they're going to be a little bit more concrete in a time. I don't think they'll do that because I think they're going to talk us about still being very data dependent. But I do think that the probability is that we're going to be weighing on the side of a dovish Fed at the helm being Janet Yellen. And, from there, I think that the potential for a reversal here, at least, and people, being a little bit more confident in the markets towards the middle of the week, unless any other news outside of what we've seen with Europe and Greece and China, Japan, crop up. Other than that, the probability is that if you think about seasonal patterns, this is not a time to get overly necessarily bullish, but not to be bearish either. But you know what? We have to take it day by day right now. We're going to end it there towards the holidays. We try to, keep it a little bit lighter into the end of the year. Of course, we have some great guests coming up, as we always do. Thank you always for your emails. Very insightful stuff that you've been sending me, by the way. If you haven't mailed me before, send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll be happy to answer your emails, as I always do. And I really much, very much appreciate your participation in this show. We're going to knock it off there. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.